This is Rush to Reason.
You are going to shut your damn yapper and listen for a change, because I got you pegged, sweetheart. You want to take the easy way out because you're scared. And you're scared because if you try and fail, there's only you to blame. Let me break this down for you. Life is scary. Get used to it. There are no magical fixes.
With your host, John Rush.
My advice to you is to do what your parents did. Get a job, sir.
You haven't made everybody equal. You've made them the same, and there's a big difference.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
Are you crazy?
Am I? Or am I so sane that you just blew your mind?
It's Rush to Reason, brought to you by Absolute Electrical Heating and Air, with your host, John Rush.
All right, welcome. This is Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. I am your host, John Rush, and I appreciate you joining us. A little bit of weather joining, or weather coming in as we speak, I should say. I'll do our impossible question here as we get into the second hour. Dr. Kelly Victory joining us now, as she typically does on Thursdays at this time. Dr. Kelly, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
So where you are, it's snowing sideways, Charlie said.
It is. I just left Denver and I'm heading back up north, and it is snowing sideways, which it did for the past several days up north. So it started snowing on October 12th, and I said to people, I'm just not emotionally prepared for this yet. You know it's coming, but
it comes every year, but you know, it's still, when it arrives, it's like, I guess that's my final, summer's over.
Exactly. And it's long, and you know, you'd batten down the hatches for the next 6 months.
Exactly. Well, especially in the mountains, as we all know. So anyways, that's great. We need that. We'll take it. No complaints. All right. Where I am going to complain, though, maybe complain isn't the right word, but I correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm so tired of seeing what I consider to be, you know, false headlines and things that are in the news on a daily basis. I mean, there's an article that just came out in KDVR. Colorado doctors sound off on Merck's pill to treat COVID-19. And essentially this whole article is about how, you know, doctors would love to have some sort of an antiviral pill that they can actually give patients. In other words, they want to be able to treat patients for COVID. Now, we already know that you can do that already, Dr. Kelly. But basically what this article gets down to is, well, you know, ultimately, though, we just need to get people vaccinated, and that'll be the cure. That's not true.
No, it's not true. And this is my issue for the duration of this pandemic, John. I am not anti-vaccine. I'm very pro-vaccine. And I certainly hope that we ultimately are able to create vaccines for lots of viruses, COVID being one. But the reality is this. It is never the singular best approach, particularly when we have a long list of very safe, readily available, very inexpensive drugs that treat COVID. Yet from the beginning of this pandemic, there's been an absolute refusal to acknowledge it. It's full-out therapeutic nihilism. Just let's ignore the fact that we have drugs like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and vitamin D and zinc and steroids, all of which have tremendous efficacy against COVID, and instead let's only focus on vaccine. It just defies sense.
It does. And yet there's another story that I was reading today. I didn't get to all of the details of it, but Sean Kuhn, a senior majoring in exercise and sports science at the University of Georgia, passed away on October 11th, so just a few days ago, after battling COVID-19, and then he got pneumonia. That happened for about 6 weeks, but he was fully vaccinated.
Yeah, well, and this is, again, the case. I'm not anti-vaccine. But the reality is that these particular vaccines for COVID are brand new. They have had very limited testing. And the reality is you can't possibly have extensive data on them because they haven't been around long enough. Okay, start with that. On top of it, we know that they were never intended to prevent someone from contracting COVID. The best they can hope to do is decrease the severity of the illness. So we're seeing huge numbers of what you would call breakthrough cases, meaning people who are fully vaccinated come down with COVID anyway. As a result, we know that they can not only get COVID, become symptomatic, but they clearly can spread it. And there was a big study just 2 weeks ago out of the University of California, Davis, showing that vaccinated and unvaccinated people, regardless, have the same amount of virus in their noses and throats when they get sick. So there's really no significant difference in their ability to spread the virus to others, which really begs the question, why are we continuing to discriminate against people who are vaccinated versus unvaccinated?
And it really is. I had a conversation with a gentleman yesterday that I'd reconnected with, and we were talking about this whole situation. And the reality is, and his wife was one that was really concerned about this literal discrimination that's going on right now, whether it be in the workplace or others, when it comes to vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. And what you said a moment ago was another question that came in. I can't remember where I read this or where I saw this, but there was a comment made to me recently that if you're vaccinated and you get COVID, you have less viral load that's actually going out into the public than those that are unvaccinated. And again, I listened to that and I just thought for a second, wait a minute, time out. Common sense tells me that's just not true.
Well, it is not true, and it was proven by this study I'm talking about from UC Davis, hardly a bastion of conservatism. They came out and they said there is no significant difference between the amount of virus in the noses and throats of vaccinated people versus unvaccinated. They are equivalent. And therefore, as I said, if people choose to get vaccinated or believe that it's right for them because they are okay, they feel comfortable taking a drug that is this new, that isn't FDA approved, and that has limited safety data available on it yet, good, that's fine.
Right.
I respect that decision.
Correct.
But don't do so thinking that, number one, you can't get COVID, or that you are somehow virtuous because you will, even if you do get COVID, that you aren't capable of spreading it to others, because that simply isn't the case. In fact, one could argue, John, that if, in fact, the vaccine does what it's purported to do, which is decrease the severity of your symptoms, I could make an argument that there are a lot of people who get COVID fully vaccinated, but because the vaccine gives them less symptoms, they don't realize they're sick, and they go out and about and spread it more than somebody who actually isn't vaccinated, feels like, death, and stays in bed because they've got a fever and don't feel well. So I could actually argue that it's the vaccinated, and I'm not saying this has been proven in a study, I'm simply saying the argument could be, if you're vaccinated and therefore have the good fortune to have fewer symptoms when and if you catch the virus, you may well be the ones actually spreading it.
That is a great point. By the way, any of you have questions for Dr. Kelly, please let me know. 307-200-8222. Is our text line, I should say. The phone number to call in, which it's easier to text, though, 303-477-5600. You can ask Charlie a question. We can pass that along as well. But again, the text line, 307-200-8222. Steve House is normally with us today, but he couldn't join us. He'll be back with us next week. But it was interesting, Dr. Kelly, that Steve actually sent us a message, and I thought it was really interesting this week with his comments about having a potential meeting that he was going to have with, some of the powers that be. And yet when some of the news broke here, not that long ago, those meetings were canceled rather abruptly. And I just thought to myself, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, he was talking about this bombshell video that came out.
Veritas videos.
Veritas.
Right.
And regardless of how you feel about the individuals producing, the reality is this. These were caught on live camera, live tape of people, senior level scientists, not just one or two, but a multitude of them from Pfizer, acknowledging, number one, that the creation of the vaccine was, quote, all about money. Their words, not mine.
Right.
That they were told and actually coached and trained. One of the scientists said that they sat through hours of seminars, quote unquote, hours of seminars being coached about what to say and what not to say about the vaccines in public, and to never acknowledge that they might be unsafe, to never acknowledge that they might not work, and to never acknowledge that this was about the millions and millions and millions of dollars that they were making on the creation of the vaccine. Furthermore, one of the scientists divulged, which hasn't been divulged to the public otherwise, that Pfizer is currently looking at 3,000 cases to determine whether or not their vaccine may cause heart attacks.
Right.
Again, this isn't coming from Dr. Kelly Victory. I'm simply reporting the very words that were said by senior-level scientists from Pfizer working on this vaccine. That video was made public. It's been, other than if you happen to watch a conservative news outlet or listen to a show like this one, you would hear nary a thing about it. If this were something that had happened, you know, under the Trump administration, I dare say it would be sort of front page news above the fold in every newspaper in America. But it isn't, because they are doing really a good job of sort of suppressing any negative press about the vaccines. And again, that doesn't make me anti-vaccine because I'm reporting.
Right.
I'm simply saying I believe Americans deserve to know what is the safety profile of the drug you are not being asked to take, but in many, many areas of the country, being forced to take.
Yeah, amen.
You deserve
amen.
To have the information right. about that.
We'll talk about that, by the way, as soon as we come back. So again, if you got a question for Dr. Kelly, please let me know. Dr. Kelly Victory. All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly Victory with me today, as she typically is on Thursdays, and I appreciate her taking time out of her, you know, day to talk to us. I really do. And we get lots and lots of comments, Dr. Kelly, from everybody, really anticipating even the hour that you're on with us each week. And again, we do appreciate that very, very much. So, you know, back to this whole, and you said it a moment ago, the forced, and this is my problem, and you know this, the forced vaccines, and it's happening as we speak. We've got a current administration that, for some odd reason, they have got it, you know, dead set that they're going to get, you know, essentially, Dr. Kelly, as many people that will accept this jab as possible vaccinated. They somehow think that's going to end this quote-unquote pandemic. But yet, the more we get jabbed, and even seeing other countries, I was just reading an article today about one of our, I'm trying to think what country it was, but they're up to about 70% vaccinated, you know, vaccines, or, you know, 70% of the population is vaccinated, I should say, and yet their caseload hasn't changed. In fact, it's up right now. The vaccines aren't doing anything.
Correct. There's no correlation between the percentage of the population that's vaccinated and the case rates of COVID, unfortunately. I hate to break it to you, but that's what the data are showing us, and it's very clear. Furthermore, we cannot vaccinate our way out of this pandemic.
No.
One of the greatest failures of this entire pandemic response, John, was acting as if we are all at equivalent risk from this virus, when we know that is absolutely not the case. While there are certainly some people who can become significantly ill from COVID, and certainly people have died from it, we largely know who those people are. They're people over the age of 75 and people with a certain set of comorbidities, namely obesity, diabetes, and heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, like many countries, the average age of death from COVID exceeds the life expectancy. Okay? The average age of death from COVID in the United States is 78 years old. Life expectancy in this country is only 76 years old. I am not saying that that makes any death less tragic.
Agreed.
But I am saying that we are not all at equivalent risk. And particularly, we know that healthy young people under the age of 30 are at a very low risk. People under the age of 18 are at almost a risk of zero.
Right.
So the idea that we are taking, once again, these experimental vaccines with very, very limited safety data, let's face it, no matter how much money you want to throw at a vaccine project, there is no substitute for time in medicine.
Right.
You cannot produce 12-month, 24-month, 36-month safety data until those periods of time have gone by, regardless of how much money you want to throw at the program. And so I would submit to you, when people say to me all the time, well, that's where we mandate lots of different vaccines, Dr. Victory. You know, kids can't go to school without chickenpox and rubella and measles, mumps, all of these. That's true. Let's review. For example, the chickenpox vaccine was FDA approved in the United States in 1995. It became FDA approved. It was not required in school in K through 5 until 2003. And it wasn't required in grades 6 through 12 until 2005, 8 to 10 years after it was FDA approved. That gives you time to collect the kind of safety data that I am talking about. The thing got FDA approved, so it had already gone through rigorous testing.
Mm-hmm.
But then on top of it, we had nearly a decade of information about it before people said, okay, let's make this mandatory for kids to go to school. So that's what I'm talking about. The idea that we are mandating something that, number one, isn't even required by the vast majority of the public who's at relatively low risk from this disease, and we haven't even talked about the hundreds of millions of Americans who've already had and recovered from COVID and therefore have natural immunity that far exceeds anything they get from a vaccine. But these simply have not, in my mind, met the safety requirements, and that is simply going to be a matter of time where we can sort out, are these vaccines actually associated with things like fertility issues, heart damage, including, you know, blood clots, strokes, things, all sorts of things that we have yet to be able to fully study because we simply haven't had adequate experience.
I had a listener call in and ask Charlie that, this is coming from Pat. She says she's continually tested negative over the past year and a half. The last test was 10 days ago. She doesn't want to be vaccinated. And again, she's an older lady. Not you know, I know Pat. She's not super old. I think she's in her you know, basically she's around the age we were just actually. She's older than I thought. 83 years of age, but she continues to test negative. Is she somebody that should or should not get the vaccine? And I know you can't say specifically because you're not her doctor. But in generality, yeah, what would you say?
Well, what I would say is obviously vaccination, like any medical treatment, I don't care if it's an antibiotic, a chemotherapy regimen, or a surgical intervention you're thinking of having, you need to, you know, think about a risk-benefit analysis. What is your real risk of getting significantly ill should you contract this illness, and weigh that against the potential risks of the treatment itself? At 83, there is no question you fall into a higher risk category. That said, your overall state of health, and I don't know Pat's overall state of health, is more important than the number of candles on your last birthday cake. In other words, how fit you are.
Yes,
you know,
good point. Great point.
Everything else is really more important. I know a lot of 80-year-olds in the state of Colorado who are riding a bicycle, you know, 50 miles on the weekends and still competing in sports and out
right.
there and doing
right.
lots of things. So your overall state of health is very important. Furthermore, it might behoove you to think about getting an antibody test or a T-cell test to find out if actually you already had,
good point.
Maybe you already had COVID and didn't even know it.
Great
so
point.
Before I run off and get vaccinated, you might think about actually taking the time to get an antibody test or a T-cell test to say maybe you thought it was just a cold or some, you know, seasonal allergies some months ago, and actually you already had COVID, and you wouldn't need the vaccine anyway because you already have natural immunity.
Okay, along those lines, and again, maybe I just am thinking, you know, way outside the box, and or I'm thinking things, you know, just aren't possible in the public realm. But to me, if somebody, you know, had the ability, I mean, right now in certain cases, you know, even certain venues, you got to prove that you've either had a negative COVID test. I mean, you know, for example, flying to different parts of the world, even you've got to prove either with a vaccination or a negative COVID test. To come back from Mexico, you have to have a negative COVID test. So all these different things are going on. So we're already getting certain tests and paperwork along those lines. Why have we not incorporated what you just said a moment ago, that if you have natural antibodies, you don't need any of this? Why have we not allowed any of that data to be, you know, to be a part of these decision-making processes when it comes to what we allow people to do or not do?
I truly can't explain it. It is a mass psychosis, John. There are now 30 studies that document that natural immunity not only exists, but it is broad, robust, and enduring, and is better than vaccine-induced immunity. 30 studies. So this isn't one or two. This isn't just observational stuff. We now know, and this only replicates what we've known for decades, frankly. We knew the virus that we have the most experience with, that's most closely, you know, most alike COVID-19, which, you know, is called SARS-CoV-2, would be SARS-CoV-1. The SARS epidemic that happened back in 2003, very similar virus. We know that people who had SARS back in 2003 still, to this day, 18 years later, have immunity to that virus. So we have every reason to believe that natural immunity from COVID-19 won't just last a year, as the last study just proved, more than 12 months, these people have evidence of a clear, you know, robust immunity, but we have every reason to believe it will last years or decades. So the fact that they are not doing this truly defies the science. Furthermore, I might once again remind people that there are a heck of a lot of viruses out there and illnesses out there, infectious diseases,
true,
that are a whole lot more deadly than COVID-19, for which we don't have this ridiculous anxiety about. You never think when you get on a plane, I wonder if the guy next to me might have, say, drug-resistant tuberculosis, something that has a 38 to 40% mortality rate.
Right.
Okay?
Great
what
point.
The guy next to me has meningitis.
Great point.
40% mortality rate.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think about that.
That's right.
We go about our day knowing we could be exposed to things. You do the best job you can to take care of your own immune system, but we don't require people to get tuberculosis tests before
true
they get on an airplane.
True.
And
great
that
point
is a disease that I would submit to you is far more deadly by an order of magnitude.
Agreed.
Than COVID-19.
So one of my great friends, Susan, called in. She's a dental hygienist, used to be mine, by the way. She follows all of the health protocols, but yet the American Dental Association is just now promoting a vaccine mandate for all dental workers. And her question is, why now? Is there some sort of a kickback going back to the, you know, either the medical professionals or so on in getting this pushed out now when all the way up to this point, that was not a big deal in the dental world?
Well, not only wasn't a big deal, but I would submit to you that there are physicians like myself and frontline workers, whether they're police officers or grocery store workers or whoever else, who are out there for the first 20 months of this pandemic, holding the fort together, keeping the wheels on the bus and keeping things going, putting ourselves out there, exposing ourselves. We were considered heroes. They were having ticker tape parades for us. Now, all of a sudden, in October of 2021, we are the pariah. We are somehow a threat to humanity, mm-hmm, if we don't get vaccinated. You know, we were, and the same thing with the dental hygienists and people who are out there working. I don't believe there's any, quote, kickback to physicians. There clearly is a kickback, a huge amount of money to be made in the billions, with a B, of dollars to big pharma. And I think that that's largely, mm-hmm, what this is about.
I agree.
Furthermore, again, I will remind people that although small employers, large employers, everybody is blaming these mandates on President Biden. They're saying, well, I didn't really want to do it. Take, for example, the CEO of Southwest Airlines saying, you know, I don't believe in these mandates, but my hand was forced by the mandate by President Biden. There is no mandate.
No.
There is
no law. It hasn't even been finalized by OSHA yet.
Executive order.
That's right.
Nothing's been finalized.
That's right.
So this was a well-placed press release by President Biden that people have taken and run with, that he has essentially empowered businesses to be the strong arm of the federal government, which I and everyone should find highly objectionable.
Right.
But there is, in fact, no law. There is no mandate. There
nope
is no executive order.
Nope.
So right now, and furthermore, there is no FDA-approved vaccine available in the United States. None.
Yeah, there's none on the shelves anywhere. I read that the other day as well, and I think I can't remember whether,
yeah,
I know you've been a part of this, and I've had some other information along those lines as well. It's not available. I don't care what Walgreens,
correct,
or CVS or wherever you go, if you ask them what vial they're using, it is a non-FDA approved vial they're drawing from.
That is correct. There is zero. The only FDA approved vaccine is Pfizer's vaccine called Comirnaty. And that is not available as yet in the United States. They are allowing Pfizer to use up their massive supplies of the previous stuff, which was only out there under the emergency use authorization.
Mm-hmm.
So you may go in and get a, quote, Pfizer vaccine, but I promise you, you are not, as of today, getting an FDA-approved vaccine, and therefore, you have absolutely zero leg to stand on. There's no liability. You can't go back to anybody. Should you have an adverse event, you cannot go back to anybody because there is no FDA-approved vaccine available in the United States as of today.
That's right. So along those lines, two questions with what you just said. So caller John called in and said that, and I already know the answer to this, but I'm going to let you answer it, that he heard that the CDC is ignoring any of the post-vaccine illnesses and or deaths that occur within 15 days of the vaccination. They're only collecting data that happened after that 15-day period. And I think you've even told me that, yes, that in fact is true.
Well, I can't say that. What I can tell you is that the CDC is not looking at anywhere near a fraction of the actual adverse events that are occurring. We know that we have the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is an antiquated system. A study done, you know, up at Harvard showed that they anticipate or say think that there's somewhere around 1 to 10% total of the actual adverse events are actually captured. I can tell you, without divulging any personal information, I saw a patient just today who suffered an acute stroke, had a blood clot to his brain within 4 hours of getting a vaccine, ended up spending a prolonged period of time in a neurosurgical hospital, and not one doctor that he saw at the time or since then, including the multitude of internists, surgeons, neurologists, not one has been willing to acknowledge that his stroke that occurred 4 hours after getting the shot might have been, in fact, related to the vaccine, and therefore it has never even been reported. This happened months ago now. So if you take that as one example, and I have seen many, many patients who I believe whose symptoms clearly could be related to a vaccine and certainly should be investigated as possibly related to the vaccine, and it simply isn't happening. So I think that we are way underreporting, and unfortunately, the CDC, the NIH, and the FDA are dragging their feet. They have done, not one autopsy has been done on a patient where it was reported that it was believed to be a death related to the vaccine. Not one autopsy has been done. This, we've been doing this vaccine program now for coming up on 10 months. Mm-hmm. There have been tens of thousands of possible deaths related to the vaccine that have been reported to the VAERS system, and they haven't had time to do one autopsy yet to investigate it. I find that unconscionable.
I agree. The other question that I've got backing up to the actual FDA-approved vials, which are not in the marketplace, you know, they're just not in the hands of anybody in the United States of America. These folks that are out there looking for exemptions, is that something that they could actually add to their paperwork that, you know, unless there's an actual, you know, first of all, there are no approved FDA-approved vials in the United States of America. So if you want me to get vaccinated right now, you are still asking me to get a quote-unquote trial vaccination. Is there any weight in that at all when it comes to getting some of these quote-unquote waivers?
I think there is huge weight in it legally. The question is, you know, the wheels of justice turn, but they turn very slowly.
Right.
Absolutely. It is clearly a breach of the Nuremberg Code to coerce people or to otherwise mandate them or force them to participate in an experimental medical treatment against their will. Furthermore, the wording is very clear on the emergency use authorizations that drug companies cannot coerce, mandate, or otherwise by fear of reprisal, get somebody to participate against their will. Unfortunately, I get hundreds of emails a week of people saying, please help, I'm going to lose my job because they're forcing me to be vaccinated by X date. It appears right now that many employers are simply ignoring the fact that this is not, you know, I don't believe it will stand up to legal challenge. I am not an attorney, but I certainly am in regular contact with many attorneys who have filed class action lawsuits precisely on this basis, John, that you cannot cause somebody to lose their job because they aren't willing to participate in a medical experiment.
Right. And by the way, I think you are correct in that. The question is, and I've had legal experts on that have even said this, you know, the question is, are you as a employee willing to go through all of what that would take to finally get to the point where you may or may not see a settlement on down the road? And again, I'm like you. I cannot give anybody any specific advice. I'm self-employed. Fortunately, I don't have to deal with any of this in my world. Luckily, you know, I have the ability to do whatever I need to do for me personally. I'm in a very unique position that way. And I'm very thankful for that, by the way, Dr. Kelly. I'm not somebody that, you know, works for somebody else and has to get vaccinated or else I lose my job. And my heart goes out to those individuals that are in that predicament because that is a tough place to be. And I keep getting this question as well, and I there is no answer that I know of to this, and that is, okay, which one of the three would you take if you had to take a vaccine? And, you know, while the J&J is one shot and the others are two shots, frankly, Dr. Kelly, I don't have an answer for that.
sort of like asking the guy in the electric chair if he prefers AC or DC.
Exactly. Either way, you know, either way, you've got a risk of, you know, of having a problem no matter what you do.
Correct. I have to say that fundamentally I have some greater, I don't know if you want to call it greater level of comfort or less discomfort with J&J versus the Pfizer and Moderna, because the on top of everything else, we have never had a safe and effective mRNA vaccine used in humans.
Right.
It's not because we haven't tried. We've been working on that technology for more than a decade. Every time in the past, the trials have failed, sometimes with devastating results during the animal portion of the trials prior to them being used in humans. So I have great concern about them. We know that the spike protein itself that all three of the vaccines cause you to create, to start manufacturing, we know the spike protein itself is toxic, causes blood clots. It may end up causing fertility issues down the road, may end up causing autoimmune issues down the road. So I have lots of concerns about them. Again, being very pro-vaccine as I am, I've had every vaccine on the planet, save a few, largely because of areas of the country where I've worked and areas of the world where I've chosen to travel. So I've had more than the average person. Mm-hmm. But I do have real concerns about these. If the Novavax vaccine that is coming out of Maryland actually makes it to market, it's anticipated it could get to market in December. That uses more traditional vaccine technology. Again, has relatively limited safety data on it, but if forced to take one, I would try to hold out for the Novavax vaccine.
Agreed. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk therapeutics. There's a question that came in on those as well. All right, Dr. Kelly Victory with us today. And again, text us 307-282-22 if you got any questions. So therapeutics, Dr. Kelly, somebody emailed or actually called in, asked Charlie that, hey, I think what we should do, first of all, is define what they are in case there's somebody listening that maybe doesn't really understand what we're talking about. They're not vaccines. They're actually ways to treat COVID once you get it. But the question was, you know, when should you start taking them? What should you take? And for how many days? And then is aspirin an effective part of that treatment, or is that completely separate from what we're talking about?
Well, my recommendation, first of all, is that everybody should be taking the basic supplements to decrease their risk of getting COVID in the first place, or frankly, any other viral infection. We're going headlong into, you know, cold and flu season. So taking these routine supplements decreases your risk not only of getting COVID, but of getting the flu or a cold or anything else. And those are simple things that are over the counter, including vitamin D and zinc and quercetin. Vitamin D deficiency is very, very closely related to poor outcomes with COVID. We know that if you can get your vitamin D levels into the desired range, you decrease your risk of contracting COVID or being hospitalized from COVID by more than 50%. And the reason that's so important is because vitamin D deficiency is very, very common. Mm-hmm. Upwards of 80% of blacks, 50% of Hispanics, and 30-plus percent of Caucasians are vitamin D deficient in the United States. So supplementing vitamin D is very important. Zinc by itself is a great antiviral medication. It kills off lots of viruses, decreases your risk of getting cold sores, lots of things. Anything that's a viral
illness. Well, and you know, I want to stop you on that real quick too, because I should have thought about this years ago as well. But you know, for a long time, the one, I can't remember the name of it right now, is Zicam, that came out years ago.
Zicam,
that was a sort of a, you know, quote unquote, not cold preventer, but, you know, diminished your cold much, much faster. That's all that is, Dr. Kelly, is zinc.
It's zinc. Exactly. We've known for eons that zinc is a great drug to treat, you know, common viruses. So the problem with zinc is it has a hard time getting into the cell, and that's where it needs to be because that's where the virus is. So it needs to become intracellular.
Right.
So supplements like quercetin, which is, again, over-the-counter in the nutrition store, helps the zinc to get out of the bloodstream and into the cells where it can actually kill off viruses. So those three things, there are lots of others I could rattle off, you know, N-acetylcysteine and that is selenium and lots of other things that people can take to improve your overall immune health. But the top three in my mind are vitamin D, zinc, and quercetin. Now, when we talk about people actually becoming ill with COVID, then we're talking about the therapeutics that need to be given under the care of a physician. And the most common ones that we've been using, there isn't a single standalone. They're given as a cocktail based on the individual's symptoms. Mm-hmm. But they include things like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and azithromycin, an antibiotic. They include steroids, sometimes inhaled steroids like budesonide, sometimes oral steroids. And very commonly, and certainly in anyone who's significantly ill, some form of a blood thinner, because we know that blood clotting is a bad and very serious side effect of severe COVID reactions. And that's why many people recommend that taking an aspirin a day actually may decrease your risk of having any kind of blood clotting if you should develop a COVID infection. Certainly it is used routinely for anyone who is ill enough to be on those other medications that I was just rattling off.
Oh, this is all, and again, great information for everybody listening. I appreciate it very much, and keep sending the text messages in. I'll get these asked as we go through this. So back to the aspirin question that caller Mike asked. Is there anything in it that's effective for any of this, or is that a completely different discussion? You know, because we already heard lately, too, that you know, for years and years and years, doctors said take aspirin. You know, it helps, especially in elderly people. It helps with, you know, the blood thinning and blah, blah, blah. But the reality now is they're saying don't do that. So which is it? Is aspirin good or bad?
Well, there's no simple answer to that. I think that it's very helpful in COVID because, as I was saying, blood clotting is one of the serious risks and side effects of the spike protein and what happens during the COVID infection. We believe now that many people who go into severe respiratory failure with COVID, it's actually lots of microscopic blood clots that is contributing to that. So an aspirin, which is ultimately a blood thinner, it keeps platelets from sticking together and clotting, which is why we used to recommend it routinely to decrease your risk of a heart attack, can be beneficial. It doesn't prevent COVID itself. It doesn't prevent you from contracting the virus, but it can prevent you from developing one of the severe side effects of the virus, which is the development of blood clots.
All right, real quick, too, folks are asking, and by the way, we don't go into all of this detail with Dr. Kelly because it takes up airtime. All of Dr. Kelly's credentials are on our website, rushtoreason.com. There's a laundry list. In fact, we even made a special page just for Dr. Kelly and Kevin Flesch, who's our attorney, especially when it comes to legal issues with, you know, the vaccine mandates in your job and so on. So there's a full page, the majority of that dedicated to Dr. Kelly. And then we've got a little portion of that that has, you know, Kevin Flesch's information on it as well. So if you just go to rushtoreason.com, everything that you want to know about Dr. Kelly and all of what we talk about, including some of the past episodes of where we've talked about these various things, is all on the website. So I don't want to waste a bunch of time on that. Just go there, find out all the credentials. It's easy. So Dr. Kelly, we made you your own page.
Thank you. And one thing I don't know if it's on that page because I haven't seen it, but I would encourage people, if you want more information, go to earlycovidcare.org. Earlycovidcare.org is a website I am associated with, along with quite a number of other well-known experts. It has great resources for both patients and practitioners. If there are clinicians out there who haven't been perhaps keeping up on the protocols or want some guidance in terms of dosing or how to treat people outpatient, great resources there, resources for patients, how to find a physician, how to find a doctor in your area if you need to get treatment. There's a compendium of literature there. All of the studies are there backing up the science. The 64 studies on ivermectin are all there. The studies on natural immunity are there. The studies are there. So go to earlycovidcare.org if you're looking for additional information.
And again, all of that, yes, is, I just checked, that is all on the website as well, folks. So just go there, check it out. Again, we tried to put all of this in one place to make it easier for all of you to find things. And it's really, and Ann, our producer, did a really great job of that. So again, just go to rushtoreason.com, click on show notes. You'll see a link there for Dr. Kelly Victory. Click on it. It's all there. Makes it very, very easy. So, okay. One question I've got for you, Dr. Kelly, and I kind of experienced this even myself this past week. So you know, allergy season for me, you know, kind of comes and goes. I typically have a little bit of an issue in the spring, but my bigger issue is in the fall. So I was kind of reminded of it this past week. You can kind of tell even in my voice, I'm just getting over kind of a really strong bout that I had with those for the past, you know, several days. Things are clearing up, especially with this little bit of cold weather we've had that's come through. That's helped out immensely. But my question is, you know, how much, you know, medical resources are we using up for somebody that would, you know, been like, and I knew not to go to the doctor because I just knew what it was. I knew it was allergies. There wasn't anything major going on. I knew I didn't have COVID. But my question is, with all of this hype over COVID, how many resources are we using up? Because somebody that might just have a bout with allergies shows up at the doctor's office thinking they have COVID.
Well, it's enormous, and it's actually made worse. It's been grossly exacerbated by these faulty PCR tests, because you're right. Everybody who gets a seasonal, you know, cold or has some allergies, you know, worries that they've got COVID. They, you know, go in, they go to the doctors. Many people end up getting these, you know, swabs shoved up their noses. And the PCR test, as hopefully everybody knows by now, was never intended to diagnose anything, let alone a respiratory virus of this sort. We have huge numbers of false positives. Many people get a positive, are told they have COVID. Mm. They likely don't even, you know, many of them don't have COVID at all. They have some inconsequential viral fragment that's been floating around in their nose or throat for months, maybe. Doesn't mean they're actively ill, and so then they end up quarantining for 2 weeks or starting down a path of treatment that they don't need. It is really complicated things. What I can tell people is the single most common symptom for people who actually have COVID is fever. So if all you're having is a sniffle or a scratchy throat or a slight tickle, your runny nose,
you probably have
those
a cold.
Sorts of things, you probably do. God forbid, I mean, listen, I travel all the time. I travel on a weekly basis. If you sneeze in the airport,
I know.
I mean, people are diving for cover.
Know.
People are diving under the chair, and you feel like you're typhoid Mary.
That's
you're
right.
Saying,
that's right.
We've gotten a little, you know, kind of.
It's
out
gotten
of
crazy, really, Dr. K. Let's say what it is. I mean, it's gotten to the point where you know, you're afraid to clear your throat. Even I mean, it's just gotten so ridiculous
exactly.
That again, I'm wondering, you know, how many resources have we tied up? Because then the flip side of this is I have a brother-in-law who did have COVID, yet the doctor would not see him face-to-face because he had a positive COVID test, and everything was done not seeing him. He ended up with pneumonia and is still struggling with, you know, some of the oxygen levels and so on to this day, and yet hasn't ever seen a doctor face-to-face. That, to me, that's a crime in and of itself.
It is a crime in and of itself, John. And let's not forget to mention that all the people who aren't being seen face-to-face by their doctors during this 21-month period for everything else. The number
right.
of people who missed appointment, routine screening
That's
appointments
right.
for mammograms and colonoscopies and prostate exams, skin cancer screenings, people who haven't had follow-up for their diabetes and their heart disease. I'm seeing people who have delayed diagnosis of all kinds of things, whose diabetes are out of control.
Right.
They've missed dialysis appointments. They've missed all these things because doctors have stopped being doctors. It's unconscionable. There is no substitute for seeing your doctor. We cannot do all of this by telemedicine. Telemedicine is a tool, not a replacement. And we have fallen into this where now people, the only disease you would be led to believe is out there right now is COVID-19. There are a lot of things we need to be worrying about, including the burgeoning substance abuse and mental health crisis that people are suffering from as a result of the lockdowns and of this prolonged crisis. It is time to get back to normal.
All right, we're out of time, Dr. Kelly. I've got one more question coming in. I'll try to text you that so I can get this person answered as much as I can. Again, I want to respect your time. I know we had just an hour today, and I appreciate it very much. You're always great. Get lots and lots of great comments, and I'll send you a text message on this last caller.
Sounds great, John.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly.
Joining you again, sir.
You bet. Appreciate it very much. All right, again, special thanks to Dr. Kelly Victory for joining us as she does on Thursdays. Next week, we should be able to do 2 hours where we'll get more in and out. And I know a lot of times we repeat things we said in the past, but keep in mind, those of you that have heard that over and over again, we do get new listeners on a pretty routine basis as well. And a lot of times they've not heard any of the information that we share. And for those of you that are fighting with your employer over the vaccine, quote-unquote, mandate, I know it's not a mandate yet, but it's a mandate if it's to you coming from your employer, And again, we've got some resources on the website itself, rushtoreason.com. Go to show notes, click on Dr. Kelly Victory, and there's a lot of great resources that producer Ann has put on her page, Dr. Kelly's page on our website, that actually share with you things that you need to know if you're going to go ahead and fight the, you know, the mandates with your employer. And then also Kevin Flesh's information is on there as well. But there's also the regimen of things you need to be doing daily to keep yourself safe and healthy when it comes to COVID-19 and other various things that are out there, as we talk about on a routine basis as well. But I want to say a special thanks again to Dr. Kelly for joining us, as she does every Thursday. And we'll be right back. Hour number two is coming up next. If you missed any of this first hour, catch it between 6 and 7 p.m. Otherwise, again, hour two is next. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.